Now, you will now find that these features in all luxury hotels, but Four Seasons was the first and eventually other competitors followed suit. Today it is commonplace, it's there in most of the places. Many people are following this format, but at that point of time it was unheard of, right? To create an official feel, what did he do? 2-line phone in each room, a big well-lit desk and a 24-hour secretarial service. Just to emphasize that this is something which was not available in a typical motel, but he made it a point to have it so that people have that at-office feel wherein they can use them for doing their official work. Also salient to Sharp was the structure of the hotel market in each new Four Seasons location. The traditional approach of relatively fixed standards of physical and service quality across a chain was so easy to manage and maintain distinct brand equity. But not for Sharp. He rejected one size fits all approach. He wanted to do something very, very different. To be the number one hotel in town, each city's Four Seasons hotel would have to reflect what Sharp calls local color and culture. We come across a term called glocal, global plus local. Think global and act local, we say, that is glocal. So he said that if I'm going to be setting up a restaurant in one particular country, let me have the processes which I thought of, which I think about for my hotel. At the same time, it should have a personal touch with respect to the local flavor of the land. If he sets up a hotel in Mexico, then the Mexican cultural flavor should be a part of the hotel. If he sets up the same Four Seasons in, let's say, another place like Australia, then he need to have the Australian culture imbibed into the whole decor and the practices up there. Now, making it sound very local so that it becomes a little more identified with the people who are coming there. The results were worth the extra managerial efforts. By taking the local market structure, Four Seasons is less likely than its rivals to overshoot or undershoot the local market in price and quality. Four Seasons George V Hotel in Paris is rated as the best in the world precisely because Sharp designed the hotel to embody Parisian standards of luxury. He put the French touch there rather than some internal standards that does not get recognized by the local people, right? He managed rather than own and manage. This was his model. That means you are running the processes of running the hotel rather than owning it and managing it. So the model was somebody else owns the hotel and I manage it. So I am with the process of what I design. Why did he do this? He did it because he said that owning a hotel had a lot of administrative headaches, which was not his area, which he didn't want to take up. So he said, let somebody own it and I will design the model. I'll run it the way I have designed it. So Sharp, unlike his competitors, also recognized the salience of hotel's ownership structure. To his rivals, operating and owning a hotel went hand in hand. Most of the people would like to own a hotel and also operate it. But this model said that let there be an owner X and let Y be operating it and running it. Right? That was salience at Four Seasons Hotel. But Sharp had learned from experience that ownership entailed as many drawbacks as benefits. Ownership meant tied up capital, exposed the hotelier to fluctuating local real estate values and diverted valuable management time. Headaches for him, right? Four Seasons shed those burdens by becoming the first big hotel company to manage rather than own the hotel facilities that bore its name. Investment groups would come to own all of Four Seasons hotels, which Four Seasons manages on long-term contracts. As with in-room amenities that Four Seasons introduced, some competitors in due course copied Sharp, splitting their hotel management from hotel ownership. He did it. It worked. It's more like, you know, we say, stay with your core competence. Stay with your core competence. You know, like for example, I come across certain people who are in the teaching profession, who remain visiting faculty rather than getting into permanent core faculty. When you ask them their reason, they say, look, my core is teaching. When I become a core faculty, there'll be other things which I would not wish to do. One way of thinking. Right or wrong is one's own perception. So there are certain people who say that this is my core, let me do it. So the other part of it, let's get it outsourced. Let somebody else do their competency. I'll take care of my competence and we can partner together. That was the type of situation which Isidore Sharp created. right? But Sharp got there first because he saw salient features that his rivals in the industry overlooked. There came a number of people who also replicated the same model, but the first to do it was Sharp. Now also let me add one more thing. If I replicate a model created by someone, it may not work the way it works with him or her. The reason being, there's a whole lot of thought processes which are behind it. There's a whole lot of framework from where the person is operating, because that is his original idea. I may replicate it, processes can be replicated, but there is a something more than the processes which is different, which can't be really replicated. Unless and until I think like him, I'm exactly like the other person, right? Now we talk about the causality at Four Seasons. To carve out the distinctive identity for Four Seasons hotels, Sharp had to do more than take expansive view of what was salient. He also had to perceive causal relationships among points of salience that other hoteliers overlooked. Certain causal relationships are obvious to all. Room utilization and profitability is very important for every hotelier. Room revenue and food and beverages revenue also. But Sharp saw other more subtle causal relationships. Subtle is important. Something which is not noticed. Something which makes a major difference. It makes a leverage. It makes or breaks a certain type of a relationship. If such a type of a thing happens, and if you're able to take care of that, which is untold, unthought of by other people, it would make a difference. But Sharp saw other more subtle causal relationships that escaped the notice of his rivals, like hotel size and amenity levels. Okay. Now, that being said, industry standard for a full service business traveler hotel was at least 750 rooms at that point of time. Sharp saw the causal relationship between scale and profitability a little differently. If he could give above average service to guests from the substantial price premium he could command, he can offer amenities that were as attractive as those of his rivals. It's not about a size of 750 rooms or something. It can be less than that. And I may charge a little more. So when there are less rooms to service, I could be doing a better customer service, right? What would constitute a good enough reason for guests to pay a hefty premium? Why would it be justifiable for you to charge a hefty premium? Service that was different, not only in degree, but also in kind. The personal touch. The next question is, and how could one attain that level of service? Sharp saw the causal link between the way a hotel treated its employees and the way employees treated their guests, and made that link the cornerstone of Four Seasons brand. Today we talk about employees first, customers later. There was a time when we used to say customer is the king. Customer is still the king. But today we realize that if my employees are not happy, if within the company there's a lot of pressure on the employees, indifference, maybe hostile atmosphere, do you think that these employees will ever service the customers outside properly? They would not. So he noticed the importance of employees being properly taken care of, employees being properly motivated, employees being given proper incentives. So once the employees are happy, then you need not go in for special training to make them do some customer service. Automatically it flows down the line. This is one point which he noted, and he made a major leverage out of it. Traditionally, hotel industry views its employees as disposable. This is an aspect of hotel industry. Disposable means, if you notice, those of you who are listening to me coming from hotel industry, a person doesn't work in a hotel for more than 4 or 5 years. Then he moves to another hotel. And hotel industry, like some other service sector also, normally has an implied an implied way of employing people, wherein they don't expect people to retire with the hotel. They want people to run the show, and then on their own somewhere they leave, or certain conditions are made in such a way that people are made disposable. This is the type of trend that is being followed, and the turnover is high, labor turnover, and employee payroll is first to cut during economic downturns. Most hotel employees see themselves as short-term, interchangeable parts whose employment can end tomorrow. To stay in job, employees have to meet fixed, context-independent standards, which might just explain the mechanized quality of courtesy extended by many hotel employees. It means that if I decide to stay in the hotel for a long period of time, then I need to simply fall in line with certain standards that have been set, simply replicate the behaviors, and when I do this, there's a likelihood that I might be getting impersonal. I may follow the process minus the personal touch. And we do come across such people when we visit some hotels. Also, it happens in airlines industry, I've noticed. Process is being followed. Everything is going systematically. But at the same time, the personal touch by the flight crew is not so very significant. It just goes in a very plastic format, as I call it. Right? So, Sharp had a different idea of how to motivate and discipline employees. He saw a direct relationship between employees who felt well treated by their employers and guests who felt well treated by the hotel employees. Right? So the chain, the value chain as you call it, I treat my employees well, my employees in turn treat the guests well. Right? So employees believed only what they saw. Sharp says, if we were seen as showing greater concern for profit, prestige, quotas rather than for customers and employees, there would be no belief in our values, no wholehearted commitment. Right? It shows organizations have to make profits. Organizations have to make be competitive also. But this paradigm, this thinking wherein we say that employees also matter, employees have to be first taken care of, is something unheard of. It is something which few people got into. Isidore Sharp was a person who gave that emphasis because he felt like many of us feel that keeping employees happy makes a major difference in the business. Today it is commonplace. Today everybody talks about it. There are books written on employees first. But at one point of time when I started my career, employees were really, really not given that much amount of importance. It was not given that much importance, right? So the employees do matter. Imagine a service center wherein the employees are given high pressure work to service customers with a smile, and these people are inside, they are frowning. You think the smile outside will last for too long? It won't. Right? Four Seasons sought to be different in handling employees by, these are the initiatives which Isidore Sharp brought about, providing permanent employment, no layoffs during economic slowdowns. Very clear. Training employees more often so that they are upgrading their skills of how to service people. Promoting for managerial positions from within, internal recruitment, hiring more for attitude rather than for experience. Beautiful part of keeping people there. Establishing employee career paths, attending to employee complaints with the same zeal as customer complaints. Not to take employees for granted, right? Disallowing class distinction. See that there are no class distinction among the various levels of the employment in the company. In parking lots or cafeterias, a common cafeteria for everybody, for managers, for leaders, everybody in the same cafeteria when they go for dining, right? And so in the parking lots as well. Upgrading employee facilities every time hotel was upgraded. That is a very interesting thing. Today we come across a lot of organizations who are growing in a very big way. Employees remain wherever they are. And organizations by some means or the other do not reward the employees when they grow. I'm not saying all do it, but some of them do it. Now that, if the organization is growing and the employees are also growing proportionately in their incomes, incentives, lifestyles, etc., would it not be a great thing to happen? Right? Pushing responsibility down and encouraging self-discipline with everybody, setting performance high and people accountable, and adhering to credo, to the belief system, to the value system of the organization, and generating trust. These are some of the initiatives which he took up, which was more of employee-centric relationships, right? Now, this is a small type of a collage, you can say, a causality at Four Seasons. Four Seasons appears every year in the top 100 companies to work for in the Fortune magazine's list. Four Seasons is the employer of the choice in the hotel industry. In 1994, more than 30,000 people applied for 400 jobs in Four Seasons new hotel in New York. In other words, we say that this is a very successful chain. And it is not only successful in terms of profit model, but also in terms of the way the employees are taken care of internally, and which in turn reflects in the way you and I as guests when we go and stay there are taken care of, right? Now we come to the third aspect of Four Seasons as we are discussing it, the architecture. In designing his decision on Four Seasons' competitive strategy, Sharp did not proceed sequentially or give out separate pieces of the strategic making to various functional areas. Now this is very interesting. When the CEO is sitting with his team and he has made some plans, usually we make a structure. And from start to finish, everything is put in a particular timeline. This is a normal way in which anybody will do. because we need to see the whole picture and we do it that way. Now, when I do it that way, there's a tendency, does not happen always, there's a tendency that because I made the whole picture from start to finish, I'm almost predicting and expecting the finish to be what I have thought of. If I make a complete picture of complete planning of the whole picture, I map from the beginning to the end, there's a likelihood that I am stuck up in that particular process. While I have the end in mind, what I do is I allow the events to organically grow to the end to which I desire. Now, to make that thing happen, what did he do? He did not go sequentially. He did not make them one after the other. He rather put, he did it very differently. He said, let them grow together and we'll see every situation as it comes. It's not bad planning. It is not about planning, not doing a planning properly. Open to the fact that my end result is important. But at the same time, surprises may come. New saliences may turn up. New causality may turn up. So keep the architecture open in such a way that when new things come, I can make it happen. Right? So he did not proceed sequentially or dole out separate pieces of the strategic making to various functional areas. Instead of first deciding how big a hotel would be, then establishing service standards and then setting up human resources policy, he kept the chain of considerations firmly, clearly and centrally in mind while working on individual links in the chain. The goal was very clear. One organizing principle or credo, as Sharp prefers to call it, runs through the entire Four Seasons organization. It says, everyone in Four Seasons is guided by the golden rule to deal with others, partners, customers, co-workers, everyone as we would want them to deal with us. Do unto others as you would expect others to do unto you. Golden rule. Right? Now this is the credo with which this chain of hotels operates even today. Right? This is not a novel concept. It's nothing new. What is novel about the Four Seasons is that the concept is a bedrock management principle of high-end hotel. Meaning, this forms a basis. This forms a credo. It says that this particular aspect, this policy, this way of thinking is non-negotiable. If anywhere anybody does something against this, if I want to be treated well, and somewhere somebody has not treated me the way I wanted to be treated, then that is taken very seriously by a culture like this. The human being is not trivialized, in other words. He is given the importance, a true importance, not as a strategic means. He is being given importance because he ultimately matters. There's a very positive thought behind it. Right? What was new was we enforced it. Senior managers who wouldn't walk the talk were all whittled out within few years, states Sharp. They were removed. Many people we come across, they talk about motivation, they talk about, you know, employee welfare, they talk about employees being happy, making them happy, and they try to do all those things. Everything is all show but no go. Action doesn't take place. There's a lot of, you know, gas generated when the people talk about all these things but they don't act upon it. Because few people have got the guts to act upon it and live what they talk. Right? That is not what he wanted, and so he made it a point to remove those people who were unwilling to fall in line. To ensure that this entire operations remained focused on extraordinary guest service, Sharp issued one last crucial decree. This is very interesting, very, very interesting. What you can see, the bubble down below is something which is unheard of, right? What does it say? Four Seasons would have no customer service department. It sounds very weird, isn't it? Why do you need to have a customer service department when the customer service is coming out excellently well by the entire hotel? The paradigm of having a customer service comes when there's a goof up. If I avoid a goof up totally, I preempt it by making my employees so much guest oriented, then the question of service department doesn't come. That was the thinking of Isidore Sharp. So, Four Seasons would have no customer service department. Instead of making customer service the responsibility of the discrete department, everyone at Four Seasons were not just a member of the customer service department, but in charge of it. Everybody. This is the concept which is being followed by many organizations today. From the receptionist right up to the CEO, everybody is a customer service oriented person. So no matter what happens, the person who's in the dispatch, sitting somewhere in a corner of the office, writing down some dispatch papers and, you know, sending the goods to the destination, he is far remote from the customer physically. But even he is trained to think about the customer and make things happen. So the customer orientation is not restricted to only one set of people who hold the holy grail, as you call it. Everybody has to do it. Now that's a culture that runs across the organization, right? So further, now we come to resolution. Sharp arrived at the resolution that went above and beyond the two dominant models that had guided the decisions of other hoteliers, while incorporating the significant elements of both the low income and the high income models, two different models, right? Sharp's resolution produced a system of reinforcing activities, each of which fits with and strengthens the whole to outperform the dominant models of the industry. Let's study the diagram in the next slide, and we'll find that all the departments and the processes are interlinked with each other, and the whole organization is integrated. Now, a number of activities are there in the organization. If you notice the processes in an organization, what happens is there are verticals, functional verticals, and they're all linked with coordinating links. There may be one functional vertical, for example, like operations, production, maybe it'll be linked with marketing. There'll be a linkage, definitely. But there may be production, and there may be something like a housekeeping within your company, a housekeeping of the office. Now, that housekeeping of the office may not be linked with the operations. Even if there's a link, you can't see it. There's no link at all. Now, when you do it that way, you're into conventional thinking. Instead, that particular activity of a housekeeping in the office, which is seems to be far remote from the production of the shop floor, that is also linked to production, then it's a different thinking altogether. And that's what we're going to see in the next slide. Out here, you look at all these things. We have global sales and booking network, consistent global branding, global procurement department, extensive recruiting process. Take any bubble out here, and all the bubbles are interlinked with each other. Which means every activity, every process has got internal customers to whom they are answerable. Every one of them, global sales and booking network is one particular process which has got all these internal customers, and it is answerable, and it has to fall in line with what the customer wants. Everybody has to do that. Very responsible, committed way of working, right? So this type of a thing was unthought of. In a conventional model, all these bubbles will be falling in some verticals and horizontals interlinked with each other, and some bubbles may not have direct relationship with the other bubbles. Just to take an example, low personal turnover. That means people leaving the organization, you know, labor turnover as you call it. Low personal turnover, has it anything to do with global sales and booking network? Directly nothing, if you look at it. But here we are showing that this is connected. In a conventional type of a framework, we'll have this separately. It will have no connection whatsoever. With the result, this particular problem, if at all it arises here, it will be addressed in isolation. It won't be addressed with this connection. A small ripple happening in one department, which seems to be seemingly not connected with the major department, has an impact on the major department. That is the way integrative thinkers think. No part of the system, however insignificant it may appear, can be ignored, because every seemingly insignificant part has got its own importance in the larger picture of the organization. What we talk about as TQM, total quality management, right? So friends, taking it further, Sharp set out to create a reputation for service so clear in people's mind that Four Seasons names will become an asset far greater value than brick and mortar. It's not the building alone, the brick and mortar. It's something that happens within the building, the personal touch, the type of feel good, the type of warmth, the amenities, etc. Right? And the results speak for themselves. At the last count, 73 Four Seasons hotel in 31 countries, 25 properties under development. In the global top 100 hotels, there are 18 Four Seasons. Now, these are some figures given from a source at the point of time of writing the book, right? So, city administrations request Sharp to open up four seasons hotel in their city so that it can become a global destination. Every city would like to have tourists coming in. So city administrators who normally don't go and ask for requests from entrepreneurs, they go to Sharp and they tell him, look, set up a Four Seasons in our city so that we'll have more tourists coming in. That's the type of credibility they have, right? In short, Sharp's model is a phenomenal success. Sharp succeeded because he was willing to consider broader set of salient features, deeper delve into more complicated causal relationships, and view the decision he was facing holistically from a total point of view. It was not the outcome of experience and practical knowledge, as there were others with equal experience knowledge, but only Sharp came up with Four Seasons model. Throughout Sharp's decision process, one can discern clear differences between the mental mechanism of integrative thinkers and those of conventional thinkers. I think by now, as I'm discussing, many of you would have captured how different this thinking is. Go back to the discussion which I'm having. You can run the video by stopping and, you know, listening to it and taking down your notes, and you'll realize as I spoke, I unfolded the way unconventional thinkers or integrative thinkers think and act. You need to give it a thought and start putting it into practice. Those things which you seem to be ignoring today as trivial do matter in the larger picture of whatever you're doing, in short. So now I'm going to take you through the journey of what is called as embracing the mess. In the start of this particular module, I mentioned about how people look at chaos and complexities differently, right? Now here we are talking about how integrative thinkers basically embrace a mess. They're willing to take a mess. When they see something not very structured, they feel excited about it. They don't feel depressed. They don't feel put off. So this the next few slides are going to be discussing about how these guys go along and embrace a mess. The first difference between integrative thinkers and conventional thinkers is that the former take a broader view of what is salient. I mentioned about the way we take decisions. We take, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, and we restrict it at that. If anything goes wrong, we get little shaken and we are not in a position to take a decision other than what we plan. You know, the paradox of all mankind, all human beings is we are natural integrative thinkers when we are born. But as we grow, to achieve things and to manage life, we are forced into structured thinking, forced in inverted commas. Because structured thinking gives us some meaningfulness of existence, some comfort, some stability. But when you want to be a leader, you have to again go back out of structured thinking into unstructured thinking. That's where this particular process comes very handy. In the first session, in the first chapter, I talked about the importance of being structured. When we are young, we are unstructured. When we become structured, we rise in the organization and we become pretty successful. We are successful to the point of predictability of our behavior, habits, and our value system and what we do. Beyond that point, when you're handling complexity in an organization, we need to have not structured thinking alone, but we need to have expansive thinking. That's where integrative management comes into picture. And so it makes a lot of sense when you say that integrative thinkers have a broader view of what is salient. Very broad view. They keep their possibilities open. What if this thing goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? Like the example I gave in chapter 1 about, you know, rains in Mumbai in the month of winter, in the month of November or December. You could keep a possibility open saying that I may carry an umbrella. Who knows, a freak rain may come. I mean, that sounds too ridiculous. The odds are less, but yet an integrative thinker keeps himself open to that also, in short. Right? So the first difference between integrative thinkers and conventional thinkers is that the former take a broader view of what is salient. Sharp's winning resolution was that he did not stop at considering the stated demands of the guests, but also their unstated but deeply held wish to be either at home or at office. I mean, all of you will agree, people state what is what they know is accepted. There are a lot of unstated things by customers, right? Customers don't tell you many things about what they actually desire, with the result that organizations do not notice it. To give an example, you know, you go to a restaurant and you find that the food is not really good, not up to the mark, and you're a connoisseur of food. You're a person who loves food and you know exactly the taste and the various spices and all that are going into the food. Now you go to the manager or you go to the waiter and you tell him, look, the food is not good. Haven't you heard this dialogue from many waiters and many managers of restaurants? They say, nobody complains. How come you're complaining? They make you feel weird. Just because one person is giving a feedback and others don't give a feedback, it cannot be assumed that one person is weird. But many service organizations do this. I've seen this happening in flights also. Sir, nobody complains. Nobody said this to us. I don't think this is a problem. They are trying to tell you that you are wrong. The unstated part of it is so important. You know, in Hindi we say, na samajhne wale ko ishara kafi. There are certain unstated things about people which comes out in certain forms, certain words they say, certain types of body expressions. They may sound politically correct in whatever they are expressing. How is the food? Food is good. But when the way he says good and the way the body language is, you can come to know that he is actually not feeling good about it. If you are going to further probe into him and really ask him whether the food was good, he will still not tell you. But a good host or a hostess would prepare the food in such a way that even that part of it is taken care of. The unspoken, the unstated is also taken care of. In fact, the unstated is more than the stated. When you take a market survey, for example, people take stated statements in the form of an answer, in the form of a questionnaire getting filled up. What about the unstated? The unstated is the one that actually creates a shocker of shocks when it comes to a certain supply demand figure or some attribute which has been surveyed upon, right? So please remember that the unstated is a very important part of the integrative thinker. Because that wish was in his field of vision, he considered things which his rivals couldn't, as they did not just know they existed. People are numb to the fact that there is people don't express something. If I don't express something, it doesn't mean I don't have it, right? When other luxury hotels put shampoo in their showers, it was not because they understood guest needs, but because Four Seasons did it and it worked. Ridiculous. I have a success model coming out of my thoughts, my integrative thinking, and I succeed. Success is content, it is outside. Process is within me, the way I do it. Now you replicate the content thinking that since I am successful, since I have this room with this flavor of, you know, air condition, etc., etc., you also do the same thing. But if you do not have the same thought process and the same type of integrative thinking like me, then that model is going to be miserably flop. And there are a number of examples. Airlines industries, insurance companies, so many of them, one succeeds, the other tries to replicate. When the other replicates without the same credo, the whole damn thing flops. Now make sure, if one person is successful in a particular breakthrough field, the also-rans who come behind, they don't sustain for long unless they understand the credo behind what the first two lead took. It's very important, right? So more salient features make for a messier problem, but integrative thinkers don't mind the mess. They welcome it. Best answers arise from complexity. This has already been explained earlier. When they see something messier, they get excited and they start making connections between the components of the mess. They look at it as a complexity, not as a chaos. Chaos drives you away from comfort. It completely takes you away from what you can even thinking process. Whereas these guys who see complexity, they say, when they see complexity, they say, look, there is something which I can do about it. There is a connection I can see. Every threat, as we say, is an opportunity. They look at a mess not as a threat, but as an opportunity. Right? And they feel confident that they will not get lost along the way, but emerge on the other side of the problem with a clear resolution. They're very sure about one thing. It's an adventure of sorts. They have the risk, they dare. And then when they're into adventure, even when things go wrong, they look for, they find solutions and they take it ahead, right?